This is Leo Baybue for KTWH Two Harbors Community Radio. As September moves right along, we're about to have leaves changing, and with leaves changing, we have an annual event now that apparently has gone on for 12 years, and I've got in the studio with me some people who help me figure out the exact historically correct number of annual Lake Superior studio and art tours that we have had. I've got Mr. Paul Zoldan and Michael Capsos in the studio with me. Greetings, folks.
How greetings.
Are you? Hey. You are both here because you are doing different duties. I mean, Paul, you're a host and an artist, host artist and a guest artist.
Yes.
Michael, I believe you're a guest artist.
Yes, I am.
That's at the Lake Superior 2020 Studio and Art Tour that, Paul, the press release says it's the 12th annual. Did you have any interruptions or hiccups along the way?
We did, yeah. We had, of course, COVID during the year 2020. We didn't hold the tour that year, along with everything else that shut down. So we skipped that year, but then the next year we took a chance and had a lot of the activities outside, and so we were able to hold it again and has been going ever since.
Can you recall when this... You were not involved at the very beginning, Paul, or were you soon thereafter in this art tour?
No. The first year of the tour was 2011,
okay,
and I didn't join or get juried into the tour until 2015.
So lost the history a little bit, mm-hmm, some of the growing pains of the organization and the operation, but the goal was, if I recall, the name 2020 seems to be evocative in some way. It was more or less 20 artists within a 20-mile drive. Was that
right,
essentially the premise?
Yeah, the original folks that put together the tour got together and did some discussions, and they said, you know, I think that we know about 20 artists in 20 miles that we can get this tour going. And I don't recall how many host sites they had at that time. So that's how the name 2020 came about.
But it'd be my guess that there must have been some guess that there weren't 20 individual sites in 20 miles. That would be a lot of stops.
Right.
But then again, you've almost gotten up to 20 stops now, because in the year 2023, what do you have, 16?
We have 16 host sites.
Fantastic.
And along with 16 host sites, that has 39 artists distributed over those 16 host sites. Plus, we have another 5 pop-up artists that are distributed over those host sites also. Pop-ups are artists that maybe have never done a show before, and they want to just try it out, find out if the tour is right for them. If it's 'cause some of the pop-up artists, they'll only come and they'll do one day of the 3-day show. Others, they'll go on from being a pop-up artist to being a guest artist. Some of them have even gone to being a host also.
That's
so
the big
all
leap.
Depends.
That's the full transition.
Yeah.
Is it predetermined, though, that the pop-up artists that are going to be there are meant to be there all 3 days, or some just say, I can do one day?
Right. It's really flexible.
Okay.
As to what they want to commit to the tour.
And are these folks that you seek out and invite, or they've also asked to be juried and this is what's happened?
This last 2 years now, we've gone to that kind of system where we're only taking artists that have been suggested by the artists that are in the tour themselves. And
okay,
that's given us a good number of artists to choose from. They go through the jurying process also.
Right.
And so we'll look at their work and find out whether their work is what the standard that we want to have artists in the show also.
And of the 39 guest artists, are most of them returning? I mean, how many are new?
Let's see. Most of them are returning artists. The thing that we've come to understand with this kind of self-guided tour is that artists come and go every year also. So some host sites will actually take a year off. Some artists will take a year off, but they're always welcome back if they want to come back in 2 years and do the tour again.
by way of an example, and because you're actually here in the studio with me, talk about the story of two guest artists for 2023 and look a little bit at what you do and where you're going to be. I'm going to turn now to Mr. Michael Capsos, who is, Michael, maybe you should just tell us who is your host artist and what is your medium and, well, yeah.
Sure. My host is the Boreal Bounty Farms. So it's one of the sustainable farms that, you know, we have on the tour.
Indeed. That's actually a near neighbor of mine up the Lane Road, Pat Berger, right? That's hosting
Pat Berger.
That's wonderful. I'm going to turn it back to Paul for a split second, Michael, to ask about the sustainable farm participants. That was kind of new in the last year or two, hasn't it?
Right. Yeah. We just approached I think in some of the conversations that we had and getting to know some of the local farmers and just realizing how much they actually, the flavor of the local farm and the products that they produce are just so much a part of the neighborhood and of the community. And so we took a chance and we asked, we asked three local farmers if they were interested in doing it, and they were. And so I think we're up to five now, and that's probably the end of the number of farms.
It's either five or four, apparently, for Michael's.
Yeah, I'm holding up.
Michael's gesticulating
there. Thank you.
Helps me to think that it might be four. Yeah.
Three farms.
I think three of them are out in my neighborhood in Clover Valley. Yeah. So it's really been very cool. And I've heard nothing but raves, actually, from the farm hosts themselves about what you guys are up to and how they never knew what a wonderful fit this would be. I like to just say that you're folks that work with your hands creatively in different ways in the studio. Some of you even work outdoors in your art, but most are in the studio. And the others are out there on the land, and that the entities, the products, I hate to commodify things, but the things that get produced are things of beauty and things of value to the community. So it seems like a pretty good partnership to me. What do you think, Michael?
Sure, and I think the best thing about it is that it brings in different people than would have just been around for the art tour. A lot of times they're quite surprised by the quality of work that we have.
Yeah.
So it's a win-win situation.
It is. And so you mean that the farmers have not only just brought their site, their space, but they are also networking with other folks to say, you might want to come and see this. People who might not necessarily thought that they wanted to take in an art tour. Well, has it been, you've had some meaningful exchanges then with people?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's really was surprising last year. Being in a different, you know, we have when the new host sites are created, it's always a little bit of a first year. You're waiting for people to find out where you are.
Right.
And so they're like, where are you? You were at this place before. And so now they've found out where I am and I'm comfortable there. And they went to great extents to make it, you know, usable area for an artist to show in. I'm very pleased with them.
Yeah. Well, Michael, you are our artist exemplar this year. We've been talking to Paul and his wife, Gail, the last couple of years as kind of organizing, you know, entities of 2020 Art Tour. But you're one of the on-the-ground participating artists, and it's kind of nice to know a little bit about your story. So what medium do you work in, and how did you get to where you are in life in your art?
Sure. At this point, I just call myself a metal worker. And so I basically work with type of silver called argentium silver. And I also use base metals. I started long ago, and after art school, I moved to Boston, and I started working for a number of jewelry designers and high-end kind of fashion jewelry. So that's where it began, and I continued that on as I moved around the country to other places. And
so to those of us that aren't that familiar with fine jewelry and metalworking in general, were you doing what I'd call like line production, making things the same each time, or were they all commissioned or custom?
The type of things that I was doing were smaller unit productions of seasonal type jewelry. So in the fashion industry, every season has to have new things. So there aren't really a lot of them being made.
I see.
So from that point, you can take that training and work it into a small production. and, you know, make it easier for you to create one-of-a-kind pieces.
Right.
Because you already know the whole ins and outs of that process. And so it just makes it easier to go out into the market and actually sell things and make a profit from that.
And you're constantly evolving the designs that you're...
Yeah, sure. I'm always trying to make new designs that you might not have ever seen before, something unexpected. I do have some good feedback about that. And every year it does have, there is a little bit of a pressure, you know, every year to come up with new things. People want to see what you're working on. And so you just have to strive for that, you know, change every year.
Right. It strikes me that the work you do, you have small components in front of you. How's your eyesight? How's your hand? Is it a challenge as you get older?
Yeah, it is a challenge, but because I work in an industry like that, I have ways of doing things that most people might not develop. So I can do things in a easier, faster way because I make things that will be like a jig or something to help me do things easier again.
You create some wise design jigs and setups that make it easier to work.
Sure, and it does kind of bring in the science of it because there's a lot of measurements and calculating and things that have to be done to know exactly what you put into that piece of artwork.
So. Wow. And is most of the stuff freeform versus using exact geometry? I mean, turning radiuses or corners? I mean, do you have tools that help you
nail that down? Yeah, a lot of it has to do basically with forging. And so that's what I do is forge, build things from scratch. So a lot of artists will buy certain things and put them together. And that's what I would call mass production.
Assembly.
So assembly, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So mine is completely different from that. So I change it as it evolves as I'm working on it. And then I can allow myself to make something very similar to that again because I've already written down the way I've done it.
Ah, so there's a little bit of paperwork, record keeping.
So that's the science part of it for me.
Okay.
Whereas a lot of people might make something and then all of a sudden they can't remember what they put into it. So,
oh, I know the feeling.
Yeah.
Like people ask me about the construction of my house and I go, well, I should have been taking a picture during that phase.
Yeah.
But does that suggest that you're primarily building, creating designs that may evolve over time, but do you do much in the way of custom visualization with a person of an idea that they have you help them figure out what they really want? Because it must be challenging to talk about jewelry.
Yeah, and usually there are people who like to do that.
And
I prefer not to do that because it becomes that much more difficult. Usually you have to work on a project and then halfway through it, have the person look at it and say, do you want me to continue? Because this is expensive. And
yes.
You know, I don't want to have to eat the whole cost of everything at the end where you go, oh, I hate that.
Yeah, and how many times might you need to check back because it grows progressively more. Mm-hmm. You've already got much time and all materials invested. At some point, it's a really scary thing to abandon.
So what you see is what you're going to get.
Okay.
Basically. Okay. So that's where it's a part of the creativity. You know, it's like, don't tell me what color to make things because I'm going to do it the way I want to.
I'll give you a what-if question, which is, for the right price, would you consider working with anyone?
I'll keep that as a question mark.
It's an open question. Yeah. When you hear a number that you can't resist.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most artists can't be bought like that. It depends on how hungry you are. Yeah.
I suppose it does. what time of the year it is, how the wood supply is, what the pantry has in it, how many cars are broken down. You're pretty resigned to making your way with your own skill and thoughtfulness of design.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's what people hallmark people with. You know, each artist that I know of that's on the tour has their own style.
Yeah.
And you can kind of tell that it's their work. And within that scope, they evolve in different ways.
Okay. What you're saying is that people that have seen your work for a while are going to probably pick your pieces out of we can't call it a blind test, but an unlabeled test.
The same
test
way I do when I see some samples. TV show, then I know the person and I go, hey, I'm pretty sure that's my earrings.
Yep. So you've seen your work on TV?
I've seen it on
TV?
News, yeah.
Oh, wow.
In Duluth. So.
Wow. Okay. We didn't drop any names. We're keeping it clean, non-commercial radio-wise. That's really interesting, Michael. And I have heard a little of Paul's story before, but I would like to remind folks about Paul. You're a longstanding potter of great repute around these parts.
Yeah. I've lived up in the area, well, in northern Minnesota for quite a few years. I've been a potter probably from back in the 70s is when I started. Went to St. Cloud State for my art education degree. And during that time, though, I was fortunate to be able to use the studio and take a one-credit class every quarter. And so during that time, I was able to hone my skills. I really feel like I only started potting when I graduated and there were no art jobs. And yet I got a production pottery job at a honey pot factory. Is what it was in South Minneapolis. So during the 3 years that I was a potter there, there were at least six potters in-house throwing honey pots, strictly one form every day. And then there was also some contractors outside of the studio that threw honey pots too. So there was some 80,000 honey pots that were produced through that factory while I was there.
Wow.
I learned how to throw efficiently, and
yeah.
I had a potter who had been throwing there for quite a few years. I was sitting next to him, and I was throwing the bottom part of the honey pot, and then I was throwing a lid on the potter's wheel and taking a caliper and measuring every single one. So we were side by side for maybe an hour or so, and then he finally said, "What are you doing? Why are you doing that?" And I said, "Well, I want them to fit. I want the lids to fit." And he goes, "Throw 160 of the bottoms. Throw 160 of the lids. They're all going to fit." And he was right.
He was.
He was right. Yeah.
Wow.
So I did get up to that point in a day where I could throw that number. And then the next day, finish off all of those pots, carve the knob on the lid. But he was right. And it did work out.
What was the length of your tenure doing that, Paul? How long could you do that before you finally needed a little more elbow room?
While I was throwing there, I only threw five different forms while I was throwing there. And so the honey pot was the main form. But after I left there, I became a subcontractor for him also. And the main thing that I threw was, it was a honeycomb jar. So it was a lid and a base that you'd have a honeycomb in there. And the fellow who had the pottery, he boxed them up in some really nice little wooden crates, and they're all wrapped in clear plastic. And he sold those wholesale, mostly on the East Coast. And so they all went out of the shop. The honey pots would have a dipper along with them and a jar of honey.
Yep.
And be a nice little package.
Wow. So you've worked what Michael and I agreed was an assembly line type of job. Michael got away from it earlier, and you were in it for, well, counting your subcontracting, more than a few years?
Yes, and probably
paid
three.
Paid some bills, though, for
years.
You?
3 years, oh, yes.
To get
yeah.
you going in
it did.
Life?
It did. Yeah, it paid bills for me, that's for sure.
And at the end of that, when you were going to be more out on your own, were you very confident that this was the way that you'd be making a living for the next four decades?
I was, yeah. I was pretty confident that I'd be able to find how to make a living anyway.
Because I always wonder about whether it's, you know, a leap of faith, or once you have your skills down, you realize that some of these skills are in demand if you're doing well, because I guess that you need to have enough self-confidence in what it is that you're creating.
Yeah, and that was an on-the-job training. And then after I left the studio there, it was on-the-job training also on how to actually find the shows, find galleries to carry your work. And so that was all a learning curve also.
Wow. We're talking today with Paul Zoldan and Michael Capsos, who are going to be artists at the Lake Superior. I always forget to say that. Lake Superior 2020 Studio and Art Tour, and art tour at some four sustainable farms as well along the way. But there are 37 other stories of guest artists, it appears. Your two stories are really amazing. So there's a lot that you can converse with and find out about these artists in person during that tour, which, Paul, can you remind us the who, what, where? Well, the what and where of the tour.
It's a self-guided tour also, and on our website, www.lakesuperior2020.com, there is an electronic brochure and a downloadable and printable brochure that you can get. And on that, it has the map. And the map runs between Silver Cliff and all the way down to the Safe Harbor. So it's all of the sites, the 16 sites, are all within that, along that Highway 61 corridor.
And some are clustered inland, up to 5 or 6 miles inland, but they're all, boy, you can catch a lot of them in one day if that's your thing.
Yes.
I like to spend a couple hours at each place, so I'd never get through them all in a weekend, but that's okay. Some people want to see the diversity of artistry that's out there. Can you recall, Paul, the different media that and expressions that are included in here, from photography to pottery to jewelry to what?
one thing that does stand out, something that we've strove to provide, is taking into consideration all the artists that are participating in the show and making it so that we can actually have kind of a whole spectrum. Like, I was just thinking of watercolorists that we have. There's Carl Gaboy. He's just joining this year. So he's a very realistic painter with his watercolors. And then we kind of go to the whole spectrum where there's another watercolorist, Emily Christensen. She paints her pieces, and then part of her finishing process is she submerges the entire painting in a creek or a river.
Oh, wow.
And so it's kind of the whole spectrum there of whether it's realist or whether it's more impressionistic.
So Emily is doubling down on the term watercolor. Yeah.
Yes.
So to speak.
Wow. Yes.
There are some photographers this year, too. Last year we had them also, but just want to make sure that Christian Dahlbeck is going to be on as one of the new hosts.
Yeah, his studio is one of the hosts. He has a ceramic artist with him, and it's just, there are just too many to go through. I don't want to leave anyone out we start to pick and choose names. We have oil painting. We have even stone sculpture. I guess it runs the gamut. Woodworking.
Printmaking.
And printmaking, indeed. Yeah.
And then oil painting and also acrylic painters. We've got some also fabric.
Fiber artists,
people defining what they do as mixed media.
Yeah.
You just have to go to one of these sites and figure it out. And I wanted to point out, Paul, it's great that the map brochure includes the exact street address, so people that are addicted to using their GPS to get their way around the world should be able to find every place.
Sure, and also if you go to the website, you can see that there are some bios of people under each host location. And so you can see many times a photograph of the person and, you know, a little bit more about them.
Okay, so you can do some homework before you come up in case somebody really intrigues you to know where you'd like to dive into this smorgasbord, because it's a wonderful amount of choices on the palette, aren't there?
There are.
So September 22nd to the 24th, those are the dates. Do the artists ever get together and say hello to each other, or is this kind of an event where people assemble at their locations and maybe never meet each other? How does that work?
During the tour, it's pretty busy. So really, to be kind to our guests, you know, to the people that are actually driving out and coming down the back dirt roads and finding our studios, you know, to be kind to them, we have to kind of stay at our host sites
and
not go wandering around too much. But we did have a meet and greet last Sunday night at one of our sponsors, the Cedar Coffee House. That was really nice to get the artists together and to actually meet face to face. That's the first time that I've met them in 2 years that we've had I can think of a couple of them that
I hadn't. Well, one thing I didn't ask of you guys is there a location qualifier for artists who participate? I mean, don't have a lot of Twin Cities artists, for instance.
We do.
You do?
Well, we do have at least a couple.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's not a focus at all of who you select through the jurying process. There's not qualifiers like where do you live? Do you qualify as a Lake Superior artist, for instance?
No. No qualifier like that.
So many of them are our local neighbors and friends. I'm glad to see that there continues to be new blood and artists coming and going, and it's a blast to learn about it from you guys. Any last words from either one of you on what to look forward to for people coming out for this event?
I really value speaking with, you know, the people who come up to see the jewelry that I make, and that's the whole reason for doing it. You know, you get to meet the artist and talk with them and kind of get an idea of who they are. And,
right,
you know, a lot of times that will make or break whether or not you fall in love with something and you have to have it. Like Paul was saying, without the artist there, people want to see the artist, and that's why they're coming.
And this is not your run-of-the-mill exhibit in a gallery. This is a one-off kind of thing in my experience.
Yeah, it's an inside view of especially the people who are the host artists.
Right.
You get to see their space and talk with them. And so, you know, it's just something you wouldn't normally get to do. You can imagine it, but now you can see it if you come to this show. Yeah.
Yeah, and many of the artists that are in the tour, this is their only sale during the year. So this is the time when you can come to their site and look at what they've been working on and buy it from them. So it's really an important time, too, for having that interaction with the artists.
Gentlemen, we can leave it at that. I would like to note for people that you are doing this against the backdrop of either driving along the scenic highway with Lake Superior just off to the side, or you're in the woods away from the lake, sometimes with views of the lake and with beautiful homesteads. It's kind of got something for everyone. If you have somebody who's not interested in art in your car, they might really enjoy the trip to all of these places in the process. So,
and I'd like to add one more thing.
Yeah.
I'd like to really thank our sponsors, if that's all right.
Who are they?
Our sponsors are in Knife River. We have 47 Degrees Gallery and Gift Shop. And also we have Russ Kendall's Smokehouse. And in Duluth, we have Solgleman Bed and Breakfast. In Two Harbors, we have Madeira Bistro, Cedar Coffee Company, and Superior Logs Restoration. Yeah. And we sure appreciate their supporting us and sponsoring the tour also. And thank you, Leo.
Well, it's a pleasure hearing about each coming year's Lake Superior 2020 tour. And I hope in 12 months or so, we can do this again, guys. Thank you, Michael Kapsos. Thank you, Paul Zoldan. And I hope you have a great, great weekend on the 22nd to the 24th of September. Thanks for coming in.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care now. This is Leo for KTWH, Two Harbors Community Radio.